This week on Life and Faith.
It is a very unique experience, really, in human history, to see across such different national settings and cultural settings the same outpouring of community spirit and gratitude and generosity. And, you know, right at the beginning, we saw the pictures of Italians on their balconies connecting with each other, singing the national anthem and trying to sort of connect across distance. There are so many great stories of the way in which people are reaching out to those in their community who are most in need.
We have entered into an amusing ourselves to death moment in history.
It doesn't make sense to me. If there is God, God's supposed to be free.
I was 100% sure that I was sacrificing on the altar of truth my only chance for happiness in this world.
Miracles don't necessarily change anybody's mind. It just gets their attention.
And so I had to run with my child on my back, the ISA army coming behind us.
I said, gee, Uncle George, this is luxurious for a communist. Son, he said, nothing's too good for the worker, nothing.
Welcome to Life and Faith from CPX. I'm Simon Smart, and I'm joined again this week all the way from Melbourne in his luxurious seaside resort, Tim Costello.
Steady on. Not that luxurious.
How are you, Tim?
Oh, I'm good. I'm sort of feeling like Groundhog Day, 4 weeks of one day blurring into the next day and trying to remember routine, rhythm, clarity, when there's not really a reason to get out of my pyjamas.
Well, I'm looking at you on Zoom, and I'm pleased you are out of your pyjamas.
Well, I've got an athlete's body. You should know that, Simon.
Well, exactly. It is a strange time, though, for a lot of people, isn't it?
It's an extraordinarily strange time. And globally, I was talking to a friend in Entebbe, Uganda, last night. They're in lockdown. I've talked to friends around the world in lockdown. So this uniform global being in lockdown, sharing the same experience of frustration, disbelief, is this ever going to end, really is a truly global experience.
Like nothing we've ever had, isn't it? I feel like, especially growing up in Australia, there's all sorts of terrible things that happen around the world, but they always seem somewhere else. You don't have that shared experience with everyone, but it truly is. We're all in the situation where everyone you know, whether, as you say, they're in Uganda or Vancouver or New York, everyone is in this together in a very unprecedented way, I presume. It's the sort of thing you presume won't ever happen again. I mean, in our lifetime, it's absolutely astonishing. What's your sense, Tim, about how they're feeling about it? What are people saying to you?
Well, they're feeling all the very things I'm feeling. In fact, I would almost say it's the first time we've really had a global consciousness, because we're all simultaneously experiencing anxiety, fear of the other. I like to look at another person and say, I see dignity, I see the image of God in you. Now I look at others and think, could they be carrying the virus? Are they a risk to me? I must be socially distant. So it's anxiety. It's disbelief that our self-sufficiency, our self-invention, which says we can actually be free to realize our own life in the way we choose, is actually being snatched away from us. We have to be just inside, going out for very limited purposes, and that's a global experience. And the global experience each day of waking up to hear the death count in Italy, or London, or New York overnight, it's so morbid. It's that sense of wow, this is still going on. And then the global experience of solidarity. You know, Italians singing on their balcony, people singing the national anthem, clapping health workers, sharing what they can to lift the burden, humour, memes, pieces of advice. It really is a global experience, and I'm experiencing it that way with my friends around the world and my friends here in Australia.
Well, we're going to talk to Tim Dixon in a moment. Tim's been on Life and Faith before. He's a friend of CPX. He's an interesting character. He's done some really fascinating things in his life, including being a speechwriter for the former Prime Ministers, Kevin Rudd, Julia Gillard. He was involved in politics for a long time. He's now working, well, based in London, but he travels all over the place. Not at the moment, of course, but he with an organisation called More in Common. Tell us about that, Tim.
Yeah, well, More in Common is a remarkable piece of research across 40 nations that says in times of polarisation, so what we know after the global financial crisis is the rise of populism. We don't trust elites, the anti-political correctness. We've been left out by elites, really caused tribalism, and people really started screaming at each other, organised around identity politics. What Tim has done with More in Common is tell stories and do research about what actually is in common that is more unifying and more true of us than the screaming at each other on social media and taking offence and the sort of banal politics that we've been used to. So I think Tim's work and research is very timely.
Well, this work is even more relevant now, I guess. So let's hear from Tim from London. Tim Dixon, great to have you back on Life and Faith. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Simon. It's fantastic to be back.
How's life changed for you in the last few weeks? Pretty dramatically, I imagine.
Well, I spend a lot of my time travelling because the More in Common's work is across four different countries, and you know we do stuff in other places as well. So I got to say, it's the first time in I think since before I was working in politics, which is 16 years ago, that I have not been getting on planes, that I've actually been in the one city even for a period of a month or more. But I'd say like the most enduring memory. I mean, I was interested in seeing some research today that only one in three people in the industrialized world is actually working from home. So those of us who are in that situation, the Zoom calls from sort of morning, noon, and night dominate our lives. Those of us who've got kids, also dealing with another level of complexity and the homeschooling and all of those things. But for me, one of the things that I would have never anticipated I'd experience in my life is going for a run through the storied streets of London in the morning sunshine with barely a person in sight, past the Houses of Parliament, along the Thames and through Soho and all across, basically across the Monopoly board. And there's just barely anybody around. And that is a sort of a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
So it's the best time for tourism, really, Tim. No crowds.
Yeah. I'm not sure that the government would encourage that message.
And how are you coping? How are you finding it just within yourself?
Oh, I'd tell you, I mean, look, I'm in an unusual position that, I've spent the last few years working on these issues of what drives us apart as societies, what can pull us together. And this is a rare window of, alongside the profound tragedy, it's a little bit like going through a war. It is also crises and emergencies bring people together. So we're actually really busy working at sort of lots of levels, trying to contribute to work and strategies and trying to think of how do we make sure that the best parts of this moment when people are experiencing a sense of community, a sense of a common good, a sense of purpose in working together. How do we capture some of these moments and not lose them, not allow us to forget them on the other side of this pandemic?
You mentioned some of the sense of community and things we have in common. This is a great interest of yours. What are some of the more positive elements of this that you've seen already?
Well, I think it is a very unique experience really in human history to see across such different national settings and cultural settings the same outpouring of community spirit and gratitude and generosity. And right at the beginning we saw the pictures of Italians on their balconies connecting with each other, singing a national anthem and trying to sort of connect across distance. But more generally, there are so many great stories of the way in which people are reaching out to those in their community who are most in need. all the way from in India, where you've got a lot of daily wage workers. They're being helped by an initiative started by young Indians to provide aid packages to them. In the United States, the Hospital Hero Initiative, which is cooking food for hospital workers who are exhausted at the end of incredibly long shifts. There's an eight-year-old in the US who started Wee Pals, as a virtual play dates. There's the example in Prague of the students who've started this initiative for babysitting the kids of doctors and nurses. You know, in Latvia, there was a hackathon to create a smarter, quicker, more efficient way of making face shields. You know, just tonight, I was in London. I was out, but almost run out of milk. I went to local supermarket, and it was just turned 8 o'clock. And at 8 o'clock every night across the country, people stop to clap. They walk outside wherever they are, and sure enough, you know, all the supermarket staff do. And this has been happening now for the last 3 weeks across the UK. It's very much the sort of blitz spirit, the wartime spirit here, despite the, you know, the huge sort of tragedy. There's the appreciation for the NHS, the health workers. So I just think this is a remarkable moment in we're seeing the same spirit and particularly focusing on gratitude for those who are putting themselves on the front line and putting their own lives at risk, often the health workers, but also the community spirit of all these little micro communities, the WhatsApp groups, the Facebook groups, the street groups, etc., where people are reaching out to each other and trying to find if there's anybody in their own local community who needs medicines, who needs food. I mean, it's just hard to imagine this happening in any other context. I guess we are profoundly globally connected. A downside of that is that when there's a disease, it spreads really quickly. But we're also connected in a different way. And I think the digital connection is enabling us to reach out, even in isolation.
It's interesting, Tim. Your theme has been more in common. It sounds like a COVID-19 pandemic is perfect for more in common. Suddenly we discover our connections. And even in the political sphere, you follow Australian politics, you've seen the love fest between Sally McManus, head of the unions, and Christian Porter, the Conservative Industrial Relations Minister. Are we seeing more in common even at this political level?
Yeah, I think the political experience is different in from one country to another. So I actually think Australia has done very well. And I think there's a tremendous sense of public relief. I mean, what we've been finding in the conversations we've been having with tens of thousands of people across Western countries in the last few years is part of people's exhaustion with politics and public affairs is just the unnecessary, the sort of useless, futile, constant conflict between people and politics. And that, I think in Australia in particular, I think that's been suspended. I think the same thing is true in the UK. And so that's one part of it. I think just the relief in politicians sort of getting down to business. I think there's also an appreciation for politicians respecting scientific authority, medical authority, and having the humility to not say they're better or smarter than the authorities who with the expertise in disease control. Boris Johnson, for example, in the UK, he's been a polarizing figure given his role in the Brexit debate. He did something really good right at the beginning of the crisis here, just in terms of communications. He sat down and did an interview with one of the top doctors in the United Kingdom. And he set himself up, though he's a leader, he set himself up as, in a sense, the kid being tutored by the teacher, and respected that. And that way that it's played out, I think, you know, it's one reason why the Conservatives in the United Kingdom have the highest popularity they've ever had. Now, a contrast to that is the US, where there's been a much more confusing style of leadership from President Trump. But what's interesting, we've just done this quite detailed research across the US in the last couple of weeks, and the country's very divided on Trump, and you know, large numbers of people are dissatisfied with his performance, but it still hasn't stopped the solidarity. We're still seeing in the US, 9 out of 10 people say we're all in it together. And so there is this interesting moment where the politics in some countries, I think it's playing out well, in other places, not so much, but there's still this sense of people coming together regardless of that. And that is it means that there's a sort of a change in the mood all around the world, all around the Western world, even when the politics doesn't necessarily right it itself.
You're listening to Life and Faith from CPX, and Tim Costello and I are speaking with Tim Dixon from More in Common. Tim is speaking to us from London. His organisation does research around the world into the things that people share rather than what divides them, and looks at ways of strengthening those bonds and, in turn, strengthening democracies. They've done some really interesting recent research in the US on how people are coping with the coronavirus crisis. And I asked Tim, what have been some of the most surprising and encouraging things that they've discovered in doing that research?
I think it's important to acknowledge that the implementation of the lockdown, in the US particularly, but in other places too, has often been quite chaotic. There are really significant inequalities in the way in which different parts of communities are experiencing pandemic. There is a tremendous level of grief and tragedy, and particularly in people not being able to see their loved ones for a last time, you know, the fact that we can't have funerals, etc. So it's really important to acknowledge that there's all of that tragedy in this moment. And yet, there is this other side of that coin, which is this, the communities coming together. So in the US, we asked the question about whether the country feels united or divided 2 years ago. Two out of three Americans said the country feels very divided back in 2018. That number has gone, so from 63% to just 22%. So now just one in five Americans feels the country's very divided. People who feel the country's actually united has gone from just one in 25 to one in three. So there's a real shift in that. There's a very strong sense of gratitude. One of the interesting pieces in the findings is three in four Americans say they feel a much stronger sense of gratitude than before, not just for your health workers, doctors, and the scientific experts, but also just for the regular workers who are on the front line, like grocery workers, for example, who their health is at risk because they're not necessarily protected, and they are exposed to a lot of people coming through supermarkets every day. And in fact, we found in the US that the occupation for whom respect has shifted the most is actually grocery workers. Three quarters of Americans say that they feel more gratitude towards them. So that's a real shift. I think that the pride that people are experiencing in their community, in their fellow citizens, in those who are, out there every day on the front lines in different roles, it's a real shift. And it's Australians would understand this well, because in a sense, I think it's an egalitarian moment, to take a word that we often use of Australian character. I think it is an egalitarian moment in many countries around the world. And it's not just, it is a celebration of heroes, but one of the emotions that really struck us from this research was just the strength of gratitude, people wanting to say thanks. Not surprisingly also, people say they feel closer to their families. Two in five people say that. One in five say, I'm closer to my neighborhood, my community. Nobody says that they feel further away. So there is a sense of, even in isolation, people are finding human connection. And I think that's a powerful story. But I think that if I was to boil this down to just one phrase, I think it's the phrase, we're all in it together. And it's striking even among African-Americans, people who are most harshly affected by the pandemic, as the research is showing more and more. We actually found that the spirit of we have more in common what divides us is actually stronger amongst African-Americans than any other group in American society. So even those parts of the community most affected are still feeling that sense of commonality, which is encouraging, particularly in a country like the US, which is, the most polarized of Western societies. I think this is a moment, and even in the context of politics and the going into an election year, it's going to be a very difficult 6 months around that. But there is still this sort of sense of connection between people that we just wouldn't have imagined was possible just a few months ago.
Can I ask you, Tim, the moment of shock, trauma produces solidarity. We see acts of kindness, of courage, of heroism. Can you predict if More in Common will move to the next phase when we have to reconstruct?
It's a great question. And Tim, you know it from your experience with emergencies and disaster relief in lots of parts of the world. There is a pattern where you go through a phase of heroes and that honeymoon experience around communities bonding and a sense of optimism about the fact that we will return to normal, hopefully fast. And there's a lot of focus in the communities all focused on helping each other. And then when you do have something of the return to normality, there often is a phase of disillusionment where we realize the limits of disaster assistance and the fact that there are gaps that will never close between people's need and our capacity to help, and that the road to recovery can be slow. So I think that we should anticipate that that will happen and that it's going to happen. It's going to be manifested, especially around joblessness and the economic impacts. I think there are really clear pointers about how our societies deal with this in the next couple of years. We ended up with a lot of hatred, resentment, and people feeling left behind in the wake of the global financial crisis in 2008-2009, came out over subsequent years, the rise of populism as a result. And we're already very fractured societies. We went into this crisis very fractured. So it's very important that people aren't left with a sense of unfairness and injustice in how we've dealt with the crisis. And that's going to require real attentiveness and leadership from political leaders. And I think that the story that we tell ourselves about how we pulled through is really, really important. We need to capture and preserve pride in these moments of sacrifice and community solidarity and find ways to continue to tell ourselves that story as we go through what's going to be a tougher road ahead in the next few years. And that's something that we're doing a lot of thinking about. That how do you capture that story and make it the story of who we can be together, that we can find meaning and purpose and satisfaction and something more than just individual fulfillment that you get from pursuing the almighty dollar, but there's something bigger than that. And I think a lot of people are feeling that right now, but we need to make sure we don't lose it in the long road that lies ahead.
I saw a statistic, I don't know how accurate this is, but that there'd been people going onto online church services has meant a 300% increase in church attendance. I'm not sure what to make of that. But nonetheless, there seems to be, these periods, they throw up interesting questions for people, don't they?
No, they absolutely do. Well, I think that there's something very interesting happening in the way in which churches have moved community online, and how the more innovative ones are doing more than just services. They're actually thinking about their whole structures of how they connect. In some ways, I think actually faith world has probably been, because there is the habit and the practice long established of meeting weekly, going to church weekly, that the faith world has been behind in adapting to the digital world. And this is forcing change in a way that's actually probably quite positive. The numbers attending online services is quite fascinating. I mean, I've been reflecting on this a bit because I've lived in different places, I've had different church communities to be a part of. I've kind of been able to visit all of them in the last few weeks because everybody's gone online. So, and
if you don't like your local sermon, you can flick to another one.
That's right. Well, and if you're if you've lived in different time zones, you can sort of start attending on a Saturday night and you're still doing the same thing 24 hours later. So yeah, I think that's interesting. I think there's many aspects to it. I mean, there's a whole piece about people's own daily routines. So I think there's people are reflecting on mental health, they're reflecting on spiritual practice. People are seeing the value in routines, in daily routines. I think this is something of a revival of interest in liturgy, in a sense, the liturgy, some of the more traditional things. It's made me think about, we are normally in our lives, we are used to tremendous variety and diversity and, lots of interesting experience and day to day. And we're forced in this situation into a very repetitive lifestyle if we're kind of locked in our houses. Obviously, we have, all of the entertainments, the digital access, etc. But in some ways, this is a return to the relative banality or the less things to distract you that most people have experienced in most of history. And one of the things that has given people structure and spirituality in their lives is routine and you know, spiritual practice. And so I think there's something of that happening as well. So look, you know, we'll piece this story together in sometime in the future of what the impact of all of this has been on us. I think that there's lots of different dimensions of it that we're experiencing. And it's the strange part of it as well is that we're all experiencing it. I mean, admittedly in very different ways, if you're a key worker versus if you're isolated at home. But it's a collective experience that those of us who have gone through it will be talking to each other about it for all of our lives. What's, I think, important about that is that we draw the best parts of that out in terms of what we've learned from this experience that can make our societies better places in the future. And maybe, just maybe, we can, you know, snap back from the direction, the sort of spiraling division and polarization that we've seen in the last few years. Maybe this is a moment where we can get onto a different path coming out the other side.
Certainly, a crisis seems to be good for the faith business. For me personally, not being an activist, having to actually say, I've got to listen to others, I've got to pray, I can't go and do what I normally do, has been a spiritual discipline and demand on my life. Has this been an experience for you also, Tim?
It's got me into some, I mean, I've really appreciated some of the different resources that have been created because of being more isolated. So there's the that fantastic movement that started, I guess, a decade or more ago. Pete Gregg started the 24/7 prayer movement. And they have been doing it's called Lectio 365. It's like a daily prayer app. And they didn't just sort of do them all at the end of last year and sort of dump them online. They've been changing them day by day in response to the crisis and giving people prayers to pray and giving direction and reflection upon the nature of pandemics and Christian role and all of that. And I found that was great because that is a good, instead of sort of waking up in the morning and immediately jumping onto my smartphone to find out the miseries of the last sort of 6 hours while I was asleep, you know, I can start with something that is a much better way to start the day. So yeah, I think that we're all discovering different resources like that, and I've valued them, stuff like that a lot.
That was Tim Dixon from London. He is the co-founder of an organisation called More in Common, and his work's getting more and more relevant for today, I think, Tim. Now, this whole period, there's all sorts of ways it's unfolding, and it'll be, you know, we're all fascinated by how that's going to go roll out. One of the things that it's done at the very least, though, is to for those of us in the West who've been able to build up this illusion for ourselves that we have some sort of control over our lives, we've sort of had that shattered, haven't we?
Yeah, we really have. I think the shock waves of our dominant story that I'm the master of my own destiny, I'm the captain of my own soul, I will strike out. I'm actually contained, locked down. I can't do the things that once I would have said make my life meaningful and worthwhile.
People's mortality too. We're good at distracting ourselves from that, staying away from these questions of mortality in the West. Bit harder these days, though.
Yeah, I think psychologists will tell us this, that so much of life is really a sublimation and an escape because we won't face the fear of death. The fear of death mocks whatever we do. What's the point? We're only going to die. We know that if you can't face your mortality, you may lead a life that is secondary in terms of its escapes. So here is a global threat to all of us, watching the numbers who die, worried for loved ones who are at risk, who have comorbidities. So that mortality issue is the moment of moral seriousness, of actually really facing ourselves in our deepest fear.
Yeah, there's a spiritual question there, isn't there? And, you know, we talked with Tim about the way churches are getting a bit of a boost to some of their online activity. That's an interesting phenomenon. And perhaps it is a case where people are starting to go, well, I wonder if I need to consider some of these questions again.
Yeah, I think it's undoubtedly true that most people, after the initial frustration and dealing with the anxiety, going, so what does this actually mean? And what does it mean for the fact that I wasn't very good at talking to my family? I didn't make the effort with perhaps some neighbours and friends, and got resentful if they seemed to forget me. But what about how I was living? I think there's a whole heap of reflection going on, which does, it does go to who we are. And I happen to believe that that is a spiritual question, that we aren't simply biological freaks in a cosmic zoo, a set of atoms that randomly woke up and developed consciousness. I think there is something deeper. I do hope this crisis is entrenching some of those questions.
Well, it's a story that's a long way from over, Tim. It's been good sort of checking in with you in the last couple of weeks, and I think we'll do it again sometime soon. Thanks for being here.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
This has been Life and Faith from CPX with me, Simon Smart, and Tim Costello. A really special thanks today to Tim Dixon from More in Common. Next week.
I can remember visiting my dad in hospital after an operation when I was about six, and looking at the nurses in their sort of starched uniforms moving around the ward really briskly and being absolutely fascinated by them and what they did. So I sort of thought of a few other things along the way, but I kept coming back to nursing.